Good morning. Who knew that the tariffs would bring such drama? But drama it was. The start of the week, this.
Red Monday. Stock markets around the globe fall again after Donald Trump says his tariffs are here to stay. Also,
But on Wednesday, this.
Just some breaking news in the last couple of minutes. Donald Trump has said that he will apply a 90-day pause on reciprocal tariffs for all countries except for China. More on that anon.
I'm sorry, pardon?
Global trade, normally a matter for the WTO. This is a bit more in the realms of WTF.
You said it, Colm. And after all the brouhaha and topsy-turvy, a U-turn.
Well, I thought that people were jumping a little bit out of line. They were getting yippy, you know? They were getting a little bit yippy, a little bit afraid, unlike these champions. Because we have a big job to do. No other president would have done what I did. No other president. I know the presidents. They wouldn't have done it. And it had to be done. What was happening to us on trade, not only with, you know, if you look at it, not only with China, but China was by far the biggest abuser in history, and others also, but somebody had to do it. They had to stop because it was not sustainable.
Ah, yes, the economics of getting yippy. On Morning Ireland, Gavin put this to Washington correspondent Sean Whelan.
So, what happened?
Well, what happened was a huge reversal of policy. Up until Wednesday morning, everybody had been assuring markets, assuring investors, assuring other governments, no, these Trump tariffs are here to stay. The president is not for changing his mind. And that was the policy until he changed his mind and said, yeah, we're going to pause these tariffs. There had been a drumbeat starting at the weekend when a large hedge fund manager, a billionaire, a big backer of Donald Trump had suggested a 90-day pause because of the damage that he had seen being done on the stock markets on last Thursday and Friday. That was dismissed by the administration. There was a false glimmer of hope on Monday morning trading, but nothing happened. But then by Wednesday, the president had changed his mind. And it seems to be a combination of factors of people like rich benefactors, like some of the big Wall Street titans, the boss of JP Morgan Bank, Jamie Dimon. He did an interview with Fox Business News Channel on Wednesday morning saying the situation's getting out of hand and we think there's going to be a recession. Other billionaire supporters whispering in his ear, his Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent flying to Florida at the weekend saying, I think we ought to do something and change tack here because a lot of damage is being done. Then you had senators in particular on Capitol Hill on Tuesday laying into the trade representative in his hearings there saying, who do we blame if this thing goes wrong? Because the politicians were getting a bit windy. They were the ones who were going to get it in the neck from their constituents. And it's going to be elections next year. If the country was to tip into recession, a lot of Republican seats would be in danger. So the combination of factors allied to a move on the bond markets, which led to the cost of US government borrowing rising, that seems to have been the things that together forced President Trump's hand.
So a bit of an exhale all round. But it's still tense. And while the markets did initially bounce back, they wouldn't be too fond of the chaos. So they were, as of yesterday, how should we put this, still a bit jittery.
RTÉ News on Radio 1 with Karen Creed. Good morning. A week of turmoil on the international markets is showing little sign of easing this morning as world leaders continue to work out how to respond to US President Donald Trump's changing position on tariffs. Gold has risen to a record high as concerns deepen over the trade war between the United States and China. President Trump has acknowledged that a period of difficult transition is inevitable.
You don't say. And in the boardrooms of Brussels, a chance to take stock and regroup. And the EU reacted to Wednesday's U-turn by also deciding to pause their retaliatory tariffs on goods coming from the US. And this weekend we'll see the European Commissioner for Trade and Economic Security, Maroš Šefčovič, travel to Washington to meet his counterparts. Joining Claire, Olaf Gill, European Commission spokesperson for economic security and trade.
So when Maroš Šefčovič goes off to the White House, what is it, what does he go into the room saying? Is it to ask that question that you posed earlier, what is it that you want?
It's certainly that partially, but I mean, I think more importantly, it's to really spell out in a concrete way the areas where we believe we can strike the type of win-win outcomes I described. So one option that we've repeatedly offered to the Americans is what we're calling a zero for zero, basically that we would, rather than allow tariffs to grow on cars and certain industrial products, that we would reduce them down to zero.
So but he said no to that, didn't he, already?
Well, he said no so far. Maybe that can change. We weren't aware that the pause was coming. The pause came. Now we have paused. We're ready to talk.
So the EU has the upper hand here because of the damage caused to the markets by this tariff decision.
It's not a question of having the upper hand. From our side, it's a question of, you know, getting to a space where we can avoid these tariffs that clearly, clearly are no good for anyone, that clearly, clearly are having a very adverse impact on the global economy. Let's find good outcomes rather than keep going down the road of bad ones.
Oh, it's not over yet. No siree, Bob. But what about Ireland in all of this? Here's Irish Times economics and finance columnist Cliff Taylor with Rachel on the News at One yesterday.
At the end of what's been a fairly crazy week, awful lot remains unclear. I mean, we don't know, for instance, whether pharmaceutical exports will be included in any future negotiations between the EU and Washington, or whether they're going to be treated separately and we might just get another announcement out of the blue.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is obviously a really important one for Ireland. And when he announced his step back this week, Donald Trump certainly talked the talk in terms of pharmaceuticals and what he was going to do there. It's pretty clear that Ireland's strategy is to try and get that included in the wider talks with the US, which would at least take it off the table for 90 days and perhaps give some chance that it might be solved in the wider talks that would go on between Washington and Brussels. But I don't get the sense that Brussels is getting much response from Washington yet. It's still unclear whether Ireland's going to succeed in that or whether Donald Trump might move ahead anyway with some tariff on pharma over the next couple of weeks. He has used phrases like very soon, but things change so quickly from one day to the next. It really isn't clear what's going to happen. But that sector obviously is a big earning one for the Irish Exchequer and a significant employer. And we saw it this morning as well that Ursula von der Leyen was threatening the tech sector, which is our other big foreign earner. So two of our big sectors are still very much not out of the woods yet in this, I think.
But one constant in all this, kind of, is Donald Trump's stance against China. On that same announcement on Wednesday, he also increased tariffs on Chinese imports to 125%. Gavin got this view from Stephen McDonnell, BBC correspondent in China.
I mean, in terms of the latest increase from Donald Trump, it's been pretty quiet on the front, on the government front. But, you know, there hasn't been zero comment. And I'll point this out to you. This is pretty interesting. China's foreign ministry spokesperson, Mao Ning, has gone on social media and posted a video of Mao Zedong during the Korean War telling the United States, no matter how long this war lasts, we will never yield. And on top of that, she's written, we're Chinese, we're not afraid of provocations, we won't back down with a little American flag, a little Chinese flag. So that obviously shows you, you know, this is the attitude of the government here. Another thing she put up on social media today was a cartoon of these MAGA hats, you know, and their sale price, and sort of joking about the fact that Donald Trump's supporters are now going to have to pay more for their made-in-China MAGA hats. There they are. They used to be $50, crossed out. They're going to cost $75. So they're sort of having a go at the US because they basically think that the rest of the world shouldn't be feeling grateful because all of a sudden Donald Trump has backed down on this chaos that he's responsible for in the first place. And they've said, if you know you cause this, if you want to talk about this, you've got to sort of come to us, because they're saying, whether it's true or not, that there's been no indication whatsoever from the Trump administration that they're prepared to enter into good faith negotiations, and they're just waiting for this to sort of happen. And when you go and talk to people in the street here, I think ordinary Chinese people believe now there will be some sort of a negotiated deal. It's just a question of how long it will take until it can, well, start to take shape.
That was Thursday morning. Later that day, the White House clarified that those tariffs had actually increased to 145%. And like a massive game of tariff chicken, China reacted by slapping their tariff of 125% on US imports. And what a week it has been, your head would be reeling. With Sarah, economist David McWilliams.
I think the damage is extreme and I hope not, but could well be permanent. That's why I say permanent within the Donald Trump administration's lifetime. Basically, the United States is not a sensible partner for anybody, militarily, politically, economically, or mercantilely, which is the broad expression for trade. That's the first thing. The second thing is, as you said, the advisors are spinning. You know, an administration that spins and justifies and changes its position every couple of hours is not a sensible, serious administration. So as a consequence of that, what you saw in financial markets yesterday was this kind of relief rally. It's like, oh my God, it's over. Mm. And then this morning, cooler heads said, well, hold on a second. Is it over? No, it's not. And that's why you saw financial markets this today being very broadly unimpressed by what is happening. So they've gone back to this sense that, you know what, the major problem here is that the United States, at a critical juncture in its economic history, is run by an administration that seems to have no grasp on messaging, no grasp on economics, and precious little grasp on finance, unless, of course, it is your own mates making money in a heist, which is what you were referring to yesterday when you said people made money. Well, the people who made money, the people who might have read that Donald Trump a few hours before he announced the reversal of tariffs said it's a great time to buy. I mean, that in and of itself could well be an impeachment event. Who knows?
And he had some choice words for the whole sorry affair. Go for your ears, kids.
Yeah, so you put out a couple of tweets yesterday. One of them was such a display of weakness, you said, and I think you've explained maybe why you said that. Your other one was, what a gobshite. What did you mean by that?
Well, that's a technical term in economics. You'd have to have a PhD in economics to understand the word gobshite. What I said there is very, very simple, right? Donald Trump last Thursday said, we are going to slap these tariffs on the world and we will never, ever, ever rescind these tariffs. And these tariffs are a sign of American strength. And then last night, and this is the interesting thing, the rumors in the market are because the Japanese started selling American bonds, Donald Trump's people took him in and said, we've got a problem here. And then he explicitly. So that, I suppose, gobshitery is one of those great Irish terms that covers a multitude of sins, as you know. But I think it's a reasonably accurate technical term to describe what happened yesterday.
We leave that there. Back in a bit. Welcome back. Liveline, we're all about the bargain and we do love a bargain. But in this case, it was the bargain, the view and the company. We're talking burial plots.
Eileen, would you pay 12,500 plus to be buried on the other side of the wall to Wolf Tone?
I wouldn't, Joe, no. Unfortunately, I'd rather have my ashes thrown into the Dubber River than pay that kind of money. Okay. Because, like, you know, you're dying. You're not dying to pay the most money you can in your life. You know, you come from ashes and you're going in ashes. And to me now, you're trying to find the best price you can because you have to fit in your relations as well, don't forget.
Yeah, that's...
So you're trying to cover everyone. It's like...
Like, would you specify that, well, obviously, your family buried in the grave, but would you ever think of specifying who you should be buried beside? I don't mean a relative. Would you say...
I feel like, to me, I just went up and I went by the prices, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Because, we're pensioners, so yeah, I said to the guy, Rory, bring me over to the first, you know, like you do in the supermarket.
Yeah,
you start at the bottom. And I picked out a lovely spot, and he had a stone. The only thing is, now, you could have got your name on it when you bought it, you know, with your date of birth. And I just found that a bit creepy. I didn't take that offer. He threw that in at the price.
Oh, the headstone would go up with your date of birth on it, but not your...
Everything is on it, even on the cremation, Joe. I bought four cremation
What were you afraid of, Eileen? You go up and visit someday and your date of death would be on it?
Well, you never know now with the people. But you know with them hackers going around, they could hack your grey.
Hack your grey.
None of which brings us here, but if this week has taught us anything, it's that there are no rules, you crazy kids. Here's Brendan with Mr. Summer of 69, Brian Adams.
Is it true as well that sometimes when you're in Ireland, do you play tennis with Bono?
It's the Canada-Irish Cup.
Okay. And who wins? Do you let Bono win or does Bono let Brian Adams win?
It's pretty even Stevens.
Is it?
Yeah.
And come here, in terms of dress code, I can see you in tennis whites. I'd say you look good. Bono, is he in all black with shades on or does he do tennis whites as well?
Black with shades.
Yeah, okay. So you're there with your mum now and...
I want to know how you know that.
Because it's Ireland, it's a small place, everybody knows everyone. To be honest, the reason I know it is because Bono's always boasting, going around saying, you know, I can beat Brian Adams at tennis. He says he wins every time.
Yeah, well, I'll let him have it.
You're not going to argue with him on Irish radio anyway. I think the understanding is that in Canada, you can say, look, I beat Bono at tennis all the time. And, you know, it's a territorial thing. It's fine.
We let it go. And talk of collaborating with Amy Winehouse brought the conversation here.
I presume you've seen a lot of, in your industry, you've seen a lot of self-destructive behaviour. Is it that if you take kind of people who are sensitive people and then you put them in these extreme, really exposed situations that it's difficult for them, so they drink and take drugs?
I don't think it's exclusive to music. It just happens that because people are in this public eye, it becomes a focus. But yeah, I don't think abuse and addiction is... exclusive to the entertainment business.
Yeah. You don't drink, do you?
Go on, sir. No, I do not.
Did you ever?
Never. But I mean, I will make an exception once in a while, but it's my brother's birthday or, you know, I'll have a drink with him. Or if I'm in Ireland, maybe I'll have a beer.
So never growing up or anything, you never had a few beers when you were in the bar bands and that? Was that a deliberate decision?
No. I mean, I tried all that, but It just didn't appeal to me, getting drunk, you know. Just nothing good about it.
Yeah, you could have a point there.
And then, in a hotly contested week, this contender for Killer Line.
Did you collaborate with Chimpanzees on an art project recently?
Gotta love it. On you go.
I did. There's a guy called Dan Matthews who runs a organization in America which helps animals that have been used in animal testing. Obviously, one of the most used animals in that world is the chimpanzee. And he rescues them from these different places that do all the testing, whether it be NASA or the makeup companies. And he takes them and there's an island in the middle of Florida, this sanctuary, which he's created for these monkeys. And some of them are quite interesting and they like to paint. And so what he does is he gets people to do blank canvases, to paint a solid color on a canvas, and then lets the chimps paint on top of it. And he raises money to try and keep the sanctuary going. It's quite clever.
So did you get to meet the chimps?
I did not.
Okay. And what did you think of them as collaborators? Were they creative?
Much better than my work.
Brian Adams with Brendan on Mooney Goes Wild. Hard to see, and if you blink, they'll be gone.
But I remember once at a place called Knock Lake in North County, Dublin, and I remember being there and watching one out in the open at the edge of the reed bed where the mud was. And they have this very unique way of feeding. They probe their beak up and down like a little sawing machine. So the sawing machine action, rapidly up and down in the mud. I was watching this and it was amazing to see one out so clear in the open. And then something must have flown over. I maybe thought it was a predator or something. I didn't see anything, but it got startled. And rather than fly off or run into the reeds, all it did was it jumped up in the air, it twisted 90 degrees so that all the stripes on its back lined up with the reeds and the sedges behind it, and that bird utterly vanished in front of my eyes. I could see precisely where it was. I knew I was looking at its body, but it was invisible. Best camouflage I've ever seen.
Niall Hatch and him, the ultimate bird man. So when this query came in, he could help, albeit with a steer.
Birds in centre of pick. I think it's Jack Snipe, he says. What do you think, Niall?
I'm very glad that he pointed out or gave his best guess as to what the bird was, because when you see this picture put up on the website, you'll struggle to find any bird in it at all. You're basically looking at a patch of grass and various bits of vegetation. If you look very closely, you might just see I can only describe it as a dark brown lump with possibly some sort of creamy yellow striping on it, maybe, that looks a bit like the grass around it. And that's a very good indication that he is absolutely correct, that it is indeed a bird called a jack snipe.
There's some camouflage, haven't they?
Oh, astonishing camouflage.
And here is all you've ever wanted to know, and maybe more, about this catch me if you can of birds.
Jack is a diminutive term. So jacksnipe means small snipe, the same way that jackdaw means small crow. These jacksnipe, unlike the common snipe, which occurs in Ireland year-round, the jacksnipe is solely a winter visitor to Ireland. So if this bird's seen recently, it's probably just about to leave us. The honest answer is, when we ask how many do we have in Ireland, we don't really have a clue, because it's one of the hardest birds in all of Ireland to survey, because they are so secretive and they tend to spread out in very hard-to-reach places. They love wet, boggy areas, particularly the wet, damp areas of a field or the edge of a bog. It's very similar in many respects to the common snipe. It's a good bit smaller again. It's brown and streaky, very well camouflaged. Has a shorter beak, still a long beak, but a shorter beak, about half the length of a common snipe. But the main way you would identify them is actually by their behaviour. Because the common snipe, that's the one that will flush but fly up when you're several metres away.
And zigzag.
And zigzags, exactly. Yeah, and that's why one of my favourite bird facts, that's why somebody who was good enough a shot to shoot a fleeing snipe that zigzagging in the air was known as a sniper. And that's where the name for the marksman comes from. The jacksnipe behaves completely differently. It doesn't flush up and take you off into the air until you're literally about to put your foot on it. So finding them, if you're not walking right on top of where they are, you won't even know they're there. They're just sit tight. I've even been in fields where I've known they're present and know where one is because I've seen it land, and we're walking nearby, and if there's a gap of less than a metre between the two people walking, the jacksnipe will just sit tight and won't move. Then when it takes off, rather than zigzag, what it does, it goes into a huge arc in the sky. So it goes, shoots right up, makes sort of a very abrupt U-shape in the sky, then comes back down, and it's almost impossible to flush the second time. They just don't want to take off.
And here comes Derek with the history bit.
The name sniper comes from British soldiers from the 18th century stationed in India to characterise the difficult hunt for the small elusive game bird known for, as you said, Niall, its erratic flight and high attentiveness. They came up with the word to snipe. Success in such search called for exceptional stealth and accuracy, qualities that would distinguish military snipers later. Early in the 19th century, the word sniper entered military vocabulary to describe skilled marksmen fit for long-range operation.
And just in case you're tempted for a bit of a yum-yum.
Presumably now snipe, our snipe are particularly protected and we're not allowed to shoot them anymore.
Oh, no, sniper's still huntable.
Sniper's still huntable.
Yeah, as are jacksnipe.
And you can eat them.
You can.
They're trussed with their own beaks and you don't gut them.
There you go. Have you ever cooked snipe?
No, I haven't cooked snipe and I wouldn't cook snipe or eat it. I've cooked pheasant and I've cooked mallard because, you know, they're not endangered. But no. But I mean, imagine you just truss it with its own beak and you then eat whatever morsel there must be on it, and then you scrape out the entrails and eat it on toast. Or so my La Russe gastronomique tells me.
When you say you do, you're looking at me.
I mean one.
So I have a nice snipe gut sandwich. Lovely.
Snipe gut sandwich, exactly.
Beautiful. Eat up your egg now. Oh, and we'll be hearing more from Aina later. With Clare on Monday, People Before Profit TD Richard Boyd Barrett, a familiar voice, but not sounding as you might have heard him before. He's been given a cancer diagnosis and will be taking some months out for treatment.
I noticed about the end of October and November, I was actually in the middle of the election campaign, I was shaving and I noticed a swelling in my neck. And I left her for a few weeks, which I probably shouldn't, but anyway, I moved fairly fast. Just before Christmas, I went to the doctor, and then I sort of got into the system. Storm Eowyn actually affected a little bit my getting into the system, because I had my first appointment on that day, and that was cancelled, but very shortly afterwards. And it's been very good, I have to say, the cancer services have been very good. I was in, and they suspected that it was cancer. They had to do an operation to look in, biopsy. I ended up having to get my tonsils taken out, and they found that I had a throat cancer that was prompted by the HPV virus, which I don't know if people know. I didn't know that much about it, but apparently about 70 or 80% of the population have. It can be sitting in your system for 20 years. Mm-hmm. The doctor said you probably picked this up years ago. and then it can just activate.
And he stressed that he really only wanted to speak about this to let his constituents and the public know that he'd be taking a break from politics for a while. The doctors are saying his chances are good, but he does need radiotherapy and chemotherapy.
Are you fearful about what's coming?
I mean, I'd be lying if I'm saying that it's not, you know, a worry either, because there's no guarantees. I mean, I'm heartened by the confidence of the doctors that this is a particular strain of cancer that can be, and most of the time will be, cured, albeit with fairly tough treatment. But there's no guarantees. Mm. So you've got to face that. I should give a shout out for a brilliant book I'm reading by an English comedian, Mark Steele, who's a bit of a lefty as well. I knew him a bit back in the day, but I discovered, a friend showed it to me, he wrote a book called The Leopard in My House, where he got exactly the same cancer as I got in 2023. And he's written a sort of black humorous account, but quite a detailed account.
That's very useful.
It's very useful. I'm reading it at the moment. I haven't got to the end.
I don't know if it's helpful if it's helpful or not to hear exactly what you're going to be going
through. Well, that's, I was sort of deciding, do I want to read this or do I not want to read it? But I do know he got through it, mm-hmm. which is the main thing. So,
but you know how difficult it's going to be because of that and because of what your doctors have told you as well.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, definitely it can be tough. Now, other people can respond better than others, they said. So some people, I won't say will sail through it, but, you know, people can respond better or worse depending on all sorts of factors, I suppose. But I think they've been preparing me, and certainly his account would indicate it can be pretty tough.
Because it's your throat and then you're dealing with your swallow. You're dealing with, as you said earlier, food.
Food,
taking
swallowing,
in liquids.
Yeah, drinking, all that kind of stuff. After about, I think about 3 weeks, they were saying it can start to get tough, mm-hmm. and they've got to watch you very carefully. They've got to make sure you don't lose weight, so they have to get the food into you, and so you have to look at how that's going to be done. I would imagine there'd be a fair bit of painkillers.
Oh, and he needs to quit the cigarettes. Never easy.
It wasn't smoking, which I have to confess.
You're still smoking?
I'm reducing down because they said I have to stop by the time the treatment starts.
Right.
So
that's next week, Richard.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've reduced down substantially just to let the doctors know and the public, because I know it's inexcusable. Mm. But they said it wasn't smoking that caused it, but smoking can inhibit the ability of you to respond well to the treatment and to recovery. So I fully got what they said. And
this cancer you got is not smoking related.
Not smoking related, and it's not genetic. And as a consequence, my chances of responding well to the treatment are better.
That's good news.
That's good news, mm-hmm. exactly.
But again, I come back to how you must feel about it, that it's just really bad luck that this has happened, because, you know, those things weren't a factor.
Yes, it is bad luck.
And he is hopeful that when the treatment is finished, he and his voice will be okay.
I was saying to you that we had you on the programme. We were talking to you about the speaker's row, which, you know, seems unimportant in the context of what is coming up now. But I mean, I remember you that day and you were using your voice in the way that you always do. And I was just, I wanted to know whether it hurts you to speak now. Is it painful?
No, excuse me. No, it isn't. There's me coughing, but that's just a frog in my throat. No, but after the throat operation, I was sore, swallowing. After that, for quite a few weeks, is tough. Mm-hmm. And so I was taking painkillers and yes, it was sore. It's gradually improving, but that is the area that is now going to be targeted by the radiotherapy as well. And that's fairly tough. It accumulates over a few weeks, apparently. And then your throat is zapped.
Right.
Let's put it that way, zapped.
Okay, and that's why...
Externally and internally.
We won't hear from you for a little while, but you'll be back.
I will definitely be back.
Yeah, and as you said, the office is open. There's people there to represent the constituents who voted for you. Breed Smith is helping out, which people, I'm sure, would be delighted to hear.
Yeah, and I'll be back campaigning on all those issues.
And I know you'll be keeping a close eye on everything as you go through that treatment. Richard, I have so many messages coming in for you. My screen is full of goodwill, people saying that it puts everything into perspective. My best wishes to Richard for a quick recovery. Wishing RBB huge luck for his treatment. A man of such integrity will be missed for the few months, and no doubt he will come back stronger, and on they go. Well, thanks so much for coming
in. Thanks to the people for doing that. That's really appreciated.
No, there's so many of them, really and truly. We wish you well.
Thanks.
Keep in touch with us.
I will.
And we'll see you in a couple
of
months.
Thanks for having me on.
Not at all.
Richard Boyd Barrett with Claire. Back in a bit. Welcome back. And what a gorgeous week we've had.
our continuing series, as long as it lasts, of putting Morning Ireland's weather forecast to music. And today it was Aoife Keighley. Hello, Aoife.
Thank you very much and good morning. Well, the high pressure that's brought this fine spell of weather won't be going anywhere for the workers, even creeping up to around 20 degrees in sun. A dry and sunny day. Highs will be between 14 and 19 degrees.
Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun, and I say, it's all right.
And that's your latest forecast. So from all of us here at Menairn, have a lovely day.
Dennis Junior Vaughan, is that right, who runs Spoonie's fish and chip shop and ice cream shop in Lahinch in County Clare? Good morning to you, Dennis.
Good morning, how are you?
I heard Lahinch yesterday was wild.
My God, it was like Las Vegas to mind Lahinch. The first kind of wave, you get around probably about 12 or 1, and then you get another bigger wave then around 3 or 4 o'clock when the schools are done, and it's just mayhem then for the rest of the day.
And are people getting in the water?
Oh my God, yeah. You have busloads of kids coming up with the teachers and they're just sending them out into the water. I think they're nearly getting back at them for that.
Okay, very good. So 99s, are you dreaming of them in your sleep at this stage?
Oh my God, I've been doing them. It's like muscle memory now as well. You wake up and you're dreaming about 99s and then you have to go inside and you start making them. And you're like, Jesus Christ, does it ever end? To be fair, there is a bit of a knack to it. And then when you get the perfect 99, there's something so satisfied about it. You don't really want someone to give it away.
Dry and sunny for the rest of the day. Highest temperatures, much like recent days, with values of 14 to 21 degrees. Once again, warmest further west. Rachel.
At least the weather's good. Brian, thank you very much.
Every year around this time, a little cherry blossom tree. Oh, it's such a glorious thing. And we celebrate it every year. And I can tell you now, it's a picture. It's painting perfect. It's beautiful. It's a cherry blossom tree.
Let me tell you about the cherry trees. Every April in our town, they put on the most outrageous clothes and they sing and they dance around. Hardly anybody sings or dances. Hardly anybody dances or sings in this town that I call my own. You have to hand it to the cherry trees, and they seem to be saying to me anyway. You know we traveled all around the sun. You know it's taken us one whole year.
Well done, everyone. With the cherry blossoms in full bloom around the country and the sun shining and everybody smiling. It's wonderful, isn't it? I was just thinking this morning, we're so dependent on the weather for our humour, aren't we? Because it's noticeable now that everyone has a pep in their step. Everyone is smiling, people in good form. And that's because of the weather. And of course, we've no control over the weather. So should we surrender our humours to the weather? Or should we have more control over how we feel? There's a big question for you.
Always with the thinking. But he was joined on Wednesday by the prolific writer Anthony Horowitz. You might know him from the Alex Rider series for young adults and now a new novel in the Magpie Murders series. It's called Marble Hall Murders. And as Horowitz told Ray, he's quite old school in the writing.
And you write longhand, Anthony?
I write with a fountain pen. I always have done. The reason for that is that it comes from, first of all, a love of writing. I love writing, real writing, with a nib and with a flow of ink. And it connects me. We've talked about Doyle and Fleming. Not Fleming so much, but Doyle, of course, would have used ink. And Fleming famously had a gold-plated typewriter, which is one of the few things about him I think is a little bit naff. Otherwise, I think he's an amazing, great, great writer. But a golden typewriter, really? You won't find me with a golden mouse.
Do you have a lucky fountain pen?
I buy a different fountain pen for almost every book I write. Not expensive. You know, you can buy a fountain pen for about 20, 30 quid.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly, you know, I'm not spending a fortune here, but I like to have a pen. This sounds a little pretentious, but I like a pen that suits the book. I'll give you an example. I wrote an Alex Rider book about an oligarch. You know, I thought, what pen would an oligarch, a Russian oligarch, use? Yeah. And then in a second hand shop, I found a pen with a tiny diamond set in the top of it with a magnifying glass that made it look like a big diamond. And I thought, yeah, that's an oligarch's pen. So I bought it. And that's probably my most expensive pen. Yeah. But it made me feel like the oligarch, and it was the right pen for that book.
Yeah.
I just love pens. As I say, it connects me with the writers that I most admire. And why do I want to have technology between me and my story? I like to be right there in the page.
Now, Horowitz spent last weekend celebrating his 70th birthday.
If I'm sounding a little bit garbled in my speech, it was we did party.
Oh, did you party? Well, it was a big birthday. Big party,
it,
big birthday.
Listen, it had a zero at the end of it, yes. And it had a rather large number at the start of it. Now I think about it, no, I'm 70, which is sort of I'm not going to be shy about it. You know, it's not my fault. Yeah. It's just comes from living. Yeah. But I don't feel bad about it. I mean, you know, the weekend reminded me that I can at times behave like a 40-year-old or even a 30-year-old. Yeah. And it was wonderful to be surrounded by friends and family and just to feel so sort of happy in these rather difficult times.
Do you think, and maybe does a big birthday like 70 make you think about your mortality?
I've been thinking about that since I was 18.
Right.
I've always been interested in the sort of nature of the fact that we are so finite. We're the only creatures on the planet that is actually aware that we have an end. I mean, animals don't, and good luck to them. But I've always, you know, I keep a skull on my shelf behind my desk where I work, a proper, real human skull, which my mother gave to me when I was 13 years old. As a Christmas present, as I recall, which does sound a bit macabre. But at that time, I was very interested in the brain and the head. But now I use it as a symbol of mortality and a reminder. Get on with the next book. Don't sort of, you know, waste time on doing YouTube or crossword puzzles. Get on and keep writing, because all too soon, that's what you're going to look like.
A man fully aware of his own mortality. Fair play. So no bother to him when Ray asked this.
And what if, because it happens in the book here, without giving too much away, that you're mid-book and, you know, it catches up on you?
Well, Ray, that's been one of my biggest fears all my life. Right. And I have a solution to it, which is that every single book I write, particularly when they're whodunits, I leave an envelope on the shelf behind my bed next to the skull, behind my desk next to the skull, which has the solution to the book inside it. I say who the killer is, what the clues are, how you should work it out, etc. Because I have this fear that it's not just that I'll peg out at the desk, but supposing I'm crossing the road and I get knocked over by a bus, which, you know, could easily happen. I just know that my last thoughts will be, damn it, no one is ever going to know who killed Miriam Trace. So it has to be there. So at least I can be sort of, you know, fade away with the feeling that someone can take it over, another continuation of it, and let the world know.
Golly, no messing with that. Forward planning. Anthony Horowitz with Ray. Meanwhile, Dublin, written in our hearts. The One Dublin One book selection for 2025. And on Arena with Sean. Hooray, for he has returned. Stephen James Smith.
Funny enough, today when I was reading it on the page, I thought, this is so different when I read it in my head from when I hear you reading it. You really bring something to it.
I've probably said it so many bloody times now. It's in me. It's weird how physically I'll even change. But well, I'm sitting down now, but I won't be. But sure, will I give it a blast at the start?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
Sure, I'll just go from the top. Dublin, you are a grey brick upon brick full of tarmac and hipster pricks. Just face it. All other places pale in comparison. You are more than some former Saxon garrison, Dublin. Your warmth came too late for John Curry, Dublin. Are you even sorry, Dublin? You're divided by more than the Liffey. You said yes to equality. It's about blooming time. Yet, Dublin, you always proclaimed to cherish all Dublin. Your panties are on Capel Street, compromising any papal feats, Dublin. Jedward, awkward, Dublin. You're more than a settlement on the paddle. But, Dublin, what's the crack with Codlitz shite? Why don't you just admit it, Dublin? You brought back Sam again. When did you go from the Clash of the Ashes to exchanging gold for cash, Dublin? Dublin, Oblina, Balia Ohaclia, and 180 other tongues your citizens that are using to name you, so Cade Mila Falcha to all. I might just leave it there, but yeah.
Cade Mila Falcha to all. That's
Stephen James Smith with our Sean, and against our better judgment. This has gone in. Reviewers John Maguire, Arlene Hunt. The film, in case you're interested, Holy Cow.
That's so French. I mean,
draped in a tricolore and singing the Marseillaise, it couldn't be
and
more
should
French.
You be eating comté cheese and drinking red wine as you watch?
Comté cheese, I
okay, right, John.
Don't go to there.
Yeah. Oh, no, stop.
I had to,
stop,
I had to, I'm sorry.
Stop, right.
This is live radio, early.
No excuse. And on Oliver Callan, in a particularly twisted genius move, the team decided to send Aina Nilona on a meditation hour. She didn't like it.
I was in Seattle. I was sitting at the back with my gob shut for once. Can you imagine such a thing?
And eventually we were all to close our eyes and we were to breathe in through our noses. So I was going to ask only, it was being good. I didn't say, if you have a cold and you can't breathe through your nose, yeah, you banja, can you do this? Yeah, but yeah. No, nobody mentioned anything important like that. So they all sat there with their hands on their laps, all breathing through their noses with their eyes shut. Because I kept my eyes open to see what was happening. You see?
Yes, yes.
And your man was there with his eyes shut. And he was busy walking us through this. We were to focus on the breath going through our nose. And I was there thinking, what will I cook for the dinner? I have chicken at home in the fridge now. Will I do it in a white sauce or whatever? Then I have to breathe through my nose.
Yeah, you're
again.
Doing it wrong, is it? You're supposed to.
And then I looked out and there was a gorgeous robin. It came down and was walking around pecking. I was looking at the robin breathing through my nose. And I thought, mother of God, will this ever be over? And after about, I suppose, 20 minutes, we opened our eyes and then we were to come back. And we were, by looking into our mind, somehow we were meant to be able to. And it was nice and calm when we all sat down and you had
a rest.
Did
you get to look into your mind at any point?
For God's sake, sure. My mind is grand the way it is. I mean, I get up in the morning and I do what I want to do. And I mean, you only can live in the day you're in. You can only do what you're doing now. I'm in here talking to you, so there's no point in thinking what I did this morning. That's over. I got here in time. And there's no point in thinking what I'll do when I leave because I haven't left
really?
Yet.
You've mastered your mind already.
Yeah, but doesn't everybody behave like that? You can only live in the minute.
I have to do sketches for Callan's Kicks after this. I'm half writing them in my head here. And was that thing I did earlier on okay?
But if you went to meditation now, Jordan, whenever you have the eyes shut, you could be writing the script in your head. I was thinking, I was sitting there, now what will I say to Oliver when I go in now? So I was busy writing out the script in my head. So I would recommend it. I think it's a waste of time to be sitting down thinking about yourself. If people stop thinking about themselves and go out and did something, they'd be better off. If I feel I need to get a bit of peace and quiet, go out for a walk, listen to the birds, go out to the woods, do that sort of thing. Not be sitting in the room thinking I'm breathing through my nose, out through my mouth.
Ooh, if the mind is half as fast as the speech, she was set a challenge. And that is it for this week's playback. Thank you for listening. And we will finish with the track that kicked off John Creedon's week. Talk to you next week.
Let me tell you a story of a girl up in glory. She had the world in her hand, even Hades was a fire.